Welcome to the Wonderful Leaders Podcast, a place for Christian entrepreneurs and leaders to be encouraged and inspired to grow in your personal and organizational leadership. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Wonderful Leaders Podcast with your host, Dan Mordub, and a very special guest as always. I'm excited today. I know I'm excited all the time. I say that word too often, but I'm excited today for three reasons. One is because the sun is finally out and, spring is on its way. Two, because Arsenal didn't lose at the weekend. They drew, and I take that as a win in Arsenal terms. And three, because I've got a great guest today who's got an amazing just place in the kingdom of God and got an amazing career, and someone that I connect with both on an agency perspective and from a leadership perspective with the podcast. And yeah, I'm just excited to hear some of his stories. So Gareth Russell is my guest today. Welcome, Gareth.
Thanks, Dan. Nice to be here.
Yeah, great to have you on. And I'm just going to do the awkward bio bit so you don't have to cringe. It won't be too long. But Gareth Russell is the managing director of Jersey Road PR. As a business, they exist to give voice and influence to faith-based organizations through national, regional, and Christian media. Since its formation, the company's worked with charities, businesses, and churches in the UK, Australia, and the USA, securing coverage in outlets such as the BBC, The Times, The Telegraph, Spectator, The Guardian, and Sky News. Originally from Glasgow, as you might have tell through the accent, Gareth now lives in Milton Keynes with his wife, Andy, daughter Georgia, and the Labradoodle Archie. Gareth, great to have you on.
Thank you, mate. It's great to be here.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and what your leadership life looks like.
Yeah, well, so as you've read out, I'm a husband and I'm a dad, and I think I've learned and I'm continuing to learn what leadership looks like in those two roles. We had a bit of a journey personally with we struggled to get pregnant for 10 years. We had miscarriage and couldn't get pregnant. And then when we had a 1.4% chance of getting pregnant, we eventually got pregnant and welcomed Georgia a couple of years back. So my leadership of our family has been challenged at times. It's been currently challenged through potty training. But if you're talking about leadership beyond that as well, I'm, as you say, born in Glasgow. I was actually, my dad was someone who was seen as a national leader in Scotland. He was seen as a national leader in the church and in business as well. He owned a meat import business, and then also was the chair of the Billy Graham Association and Louis Palau Evangelistic Association and various others. And so he was kind of a well-known name in certain circles in the church, particularly in Scotland. And for a lot of people, that's kind of a shadow to live under that, and it can be a burden. But actually, to be honest, I've never really felt that. I just felt like, you know, he was a great example. And and I moved from Glasgow when I was about 21 and went on my own journey. But I've been involved in various industries. Before we got into the PR, I was in publishing and music, so I helped manage a music label for a bit, and that same company was working in publishing. I ended up managing that business. We've worked in India doing the same sort of stuff, and we've worked in the UK. And then, yeah, about 11 years ago, my wife and I started Jersey Road PR, and we have a small team of about 12 of us now who are based all over the country, and we're and actually all over the world, and we've kind of found, I think, what we love doing. And I must admit, I do love getting up in the morning and doing what I do. And the fact that it's for the kingdom, you know, is a real privilege, actually.
That's fantastic. Brilliant. And I'm hoping to stop asking this question to our guests soon, but we are still coming through the pandemic, and 2020 was a year of global disruption like no other, not just in terms of the business, but in every area of our lives. But so how was it for you personally, and how was it for Jersey Road PR?
Yeah, I mean, I think the two are quite linked, obviously, because this is our business. And so when you're talking about, right, you do have your personal life and your professional life, but when it's your business, there's a lot of gray areas. I think, to be honest, when it first kicked in, I don't think we really saw what the impact it might have. And When the pandemic first when the lockdown actually was the first announced, a few of our clients panicked a little, and understandably, you know, because we still don't really know what the future holds. But that meant that we had a hit to our turnover short term. And I must admit, there's a default in me sometimes when things like that happen that I revert to my own strength. You know, I revert to kind of, right, well, how am I going to fix this? And I didn't really see how I could do it, but I just kind of kept sending emails, kept working hard, you know, kept doing all the stuff. And then I just felt a real sense that actually God knew that this was going to happen. He knew right. The pandemic was coming. And there was a couple of strategic decisions we had to make. We'd said that we were going to employ one director. We'd said we were going to bring on another person who was currently a freelancer onto a paid directorship role. We said we were going to invest in our website. We said we were going to invest in our media monitoring system, all of which was going to cost a lot of money. And we kind of felt like, actually, if God had led us in this direction, he wasn't making mistakes. So let's just push into it. And so we did. And at one point, we were about 25% down as a business in April last year, year on year. We've ended up about 20% up wow. year on year. And I'm not saying it's literally nothing to do with me. it's all been God's favor. But I think it's really taught me about the importance of being professional, the importance of working hard, the importance of continuing to kind of keep your standards high, but at the same time, not trying to control where things are heading, and to continually challenge yourself. Are you really resting in the strength that God gives you on a day-to-day basis to run the business that you're trying to run?
I love that. And I think that's one of, you know, I honestly believe what you said there is one of the keys to successful leadership as a Christian in business. It's that sense of, on one side of the coin, you've got to keep working hard, keep the standards high, keep in line with the strategy you've got. But on the other side of the coin, you're realizing that resting in God, and if he's spoken, he will be faithful to see it move, you know, to come to pass. And that's such a balance, because we can err on one side of the coin or the other more readily. Some people go straight into works, and I resonate with what you're saying. It's very easy to kind of put a plan in place, work harder, work smarter, work faster, work more. But then on the other side of the coin, I also meet a lot of leaders that will just say, oh, God will do it. And you kind of know God won't do it, because God's asked you to do it. He will empower it, or he will bless it, or he will speak for it. But we've got to put our hands to it. So I love what you said there. That's brilliant. I think just taking a step back from that, then obviously, you know, that's been a massive, you know, learning curve and bumpy road. But you said you've been started, is it 11 years ago?
11 years, yeah.
11 years ago. So how did you end up starting Jersey Road PR? Because you've got a very specific mandate and mission. How did that come about?
So just prior to that, as I say, I was working in this publishing company and music label. I'd started as label manager, moved to India as part of the same company, and became commercial director, and then became managing director of this business. And absolutely loved it. I told people it was my calling. And the purpose of what we were doing through publishing and music was to tell the story of the church and to engage people in that. And so I loved that. When I was about 30-ish, the parent company went out of business, and there were about, I think about 500 staff maybe at that point. In the business. Sorry, not in my part of the business, but in the entire business. And two people were made redundant, and I was one of them. And so this job that for me had been a calling, for me had been, right, this is what I'm going to do in my life, was taken away. And you know, it was a tough season. And there was at the same time, my wife had been senior comms for a charity called World Vision, and she just handed her notice in to World Vision. And so both of us were sort of sat watching daytime TV thinking, you know, I'm not really enjoying the Jerry McHale show. What's next for us? And so, to be honest, we started Jersey Road. We were approached by a couple of people who we had connections with, asking us if we'd be interested in doing some stuff for them. And we asked if they would be okay with us doing it as contract rather than employed, and you know, doing it as freelance. And that's how Jersey Road started. So it wasn't, we didn't have this vision at the start, to be honest. We didn't have this the vision we now have, that that's evolved over time. But what we had then was a need to pay the mortgage.
Right.
And sometimes, you know, there's a great, another great podcast, obviously not pushing other podcasts on a podcast, but, there's a podcast, it's an American one called How I Built This. And they interview various entrepreneurs about how they built their business. And almost all of those guys, when you hear their story, there was some sort of hustle or there was some sort of kind of, I just need to do what I need to do. And that was pretty close to what we were at the start. But over time, as we, you know, at the start, we had clients from all over the place. We had football clubs, we had solicitors firms, we had, you know, some Christian charities and various others. But the thing that really drove us was wanting to reframe and reshape how the church is positioned in society, and how, and particularly through the media. And at the same time, by the way, we were also leading a church. So we led for the first 8 years, we led a church together as well.
Wow.
This vision has sort of grown. I think the reason we weren't clear on it to begin with is because we didn't believe we could do it on our own. So this vision to reframe how the church is positioned, or how Christianity or how faith is positioned through the media, is a massive vision. And when it's just me and my wife, you're kind of, you know, you think we don't want to be too sort of bold. We want to be humble. But what God's taught me is that if you hear a vision and you pursue it, then He'll bring the people and the infrastructure and the opportunities your way to be able to see that vision become a reality. Vision isn't about, the point of vision is not about inspiring employees, and the point of, it does do that, but the point of vision is to see God's kingdom come. The point of vision is to play your part in changing society. And it doesn't matter what you do as a business. You might be a toilet cleaning business, you might be making crisps, or you know, something else, but your vision is contributing to seeing God's kingdom come. And for me, that's what has grown in us, and we've become more confident about the fact that we can see this as reality. It's not something that's going to happen 100 years after we're dead. It's going to happen in our lifetime. And one guy who actually taught me the value of that is a guy called Ben Cooley. He leads an organization called Hope for Justice, anti-trafficking organization. And the vision he had for Hope for Justice was to bring an end to modern slavery in our lifetime. And everyone said to him, that's off the wall. Like that is, you know, it's, I mean, there's 27 million, probably more now, slaves in the world. How are you going to manage that? But he's got a vision, and it's going to happen in his lifetime. And I think we just, sometimes we don't believe the vision that God's given us because we don't think we're good enough, or strong enough, we're equipped enough, and all of those things are true. But that's the beauty of God's vision, is that He equips us, and He gives us the people, He gives us the mandate, and He gives us the authority. So that's kind of been the journey, and I think I'm more confident speaking into it now. I think that inspires confidence in those that are part of the team as well.
Yeah, that's fantastic. What an amazing journey. And it's interesting, I mean, you know, just taking that a step further, the mission that God's given you, which I'm going to read it out actually, because I think it's brilliant. We exist to give voice and influence to faith-based organizations through national, regional, and Christian media. Now, it's one thing to do that in Christian media, or to do that to people that are going to be sympathetic to the cause, but more and more, you know, the rhetoric is that we're being marginalized and ostracized, and you know, very much, you know, policies and procedures are, you know, opposed to the Christian faith. How have you managed to deal with that perception? How have you managed to sort of get past those things in the amazing mainstream media you've got nationally and globally? How's that journey been?
Well, I think the essence of it in our work in PR and media, the essence of it is understanding what makes a story. And I think the mistake a lot of people make is that they try to kind of force something on journalists or on media that is just not newsworthy. You know, it might be interesting to them, but it's not newsworthy.
Right.
But if you take your time to understand the media, understand what makes news, understand journalists, how they work, what their deadlines are, what package they need it presented to them in a way that's going to make their life easy and make it more likely that they'll take the story. Basically, if you're professional in your approach, that's I think part of it. And I think the other part is about building relationships, you know, not seeing journalists as the other, you know, not seeing them as the enemy, even, which, right. You know, we have picked that up a bit from some faith-based organizations and churches. You know, there's a real cynicism that journalists are going to take your words and use them against you in some way. And that does happen occasionally, but you have to just, I think, see that as part of the game. And so I think if you spend time building those relationships, if you really understand what makes a story, then that allows you, I think, to then be bold and to position the story in a way that doesn't lose its essence, but does mean something to the audience you're trying to reach out to. And one of the things, I'll maybe even talk about this later, but one of the things that I think we need to be really cognizant of at the minute is that I actually don't think we live in a post-Christian society anymore. I think we live in a pre-Christian society. I think we've gone from people having that sort of link or that legacy of Christian faith to that we're now the second generation of people who are families who have never been to church. So they've never been taught by, you know, the syntax. They don't know the language. They don't know the context. When we led the church, there was someone who came up to me, didn't realize that the Noah movie was from the Bible. You know, we assume too much. And so I think that presents itself with an opportunity. You know, some people, I think, who value the Christian heritage of certainly in the UK will mourn or grieve that fact that is no longer the case. But actually there's an opportunity if these people haven't been taught bad theology, if they haven't been hurt by church in some way, all we have to do is introduce them to the person of Jesus. And you know, that to me is a real opportunity. And I'm not a big fan of the word revival, but revival often comes in close proximity to crisis, and we're living through one of the biggest crises in our generation. And so I think if we built that understanding of what makes a story, if we built those relationships, there's this receptive audience, I think, that if we're savvy in the way we do it, if we communicate in their language to their needs, not trying to force kind of Christian lingo down their throats, but actually speaking normally, then you know, I think we'll see some real breakthrough.
I love that. That's absolutely brilliant. One of the things that's really blessed me, just, you know, particularly online, because obviously most things have been online last year, has been just seeing the amount of coverage that things like prayer has been getting, and like all of the, you know, the sort of mercy ministry stuff and the hope side of things, and the meals that have been given out. I mean, I think you know, from, and I'm sure you've had a hand in quite, in fact, I know you've had a hand in quite a few of those initiatives, but it's been good news. There was some great articles in the Times. There's been some really good stuff on socials. And I think, you know, I think what you're saying there as it's an amazing prophetic statement, but actually it's being lived out now. And I think it's being lived out generationally as well, because the Gen Zs, the youngsters, they don't reason the way that we reason. They reason from a very, very different place, and they want good news. They want to know what is hope and where is hope and who is hope, because they don't have it, you know. And I think that's spot on what you're saying. And it's interesting from a global perspective. I find that actually the UK is in a good place now. I think it's in a really good place where, as you said, the opportunity to have a voice is still there. Whereas in many countries, it's been much more marginalized politically and in the media and sociologically wise. And so I think I love what you're saying. I think it's absolutely spot on. So bringing that down to now and where we are, just what are some of the sort of whatever you're allowed to share on a podcast, but what are some of the clients or projects that are sort of exciting you right now, picking up on what you're saying? What's good news?
Well, I mean, this could take the podcast to a 3 or 4 hour episode if I was to go through all the things that are exciting me. That's the beauty of starting your own business as well, that you get to work on projects that you're really passionate about. And we're genuinely working with a load of stuff just now that we are just so privileged to actually be working on, because we see at the coalface what the church is doing and what Christian organizations are doing and what Christian businesses are doing. You know, it's whilst not everyone knows it and not everyone wants to know it, we're seeing it on a daily basis, what the church is doing. And that's super exciting. But I think there's a few projects that are actually one project is actually that is its story is Your Neighbor, which is a kind of a collective of about 1,000 churches, just over 1,000 churches from I think 40 denominations plus that are basically celebrating what the church has done over the last 12 months. And it's pretty remarkable when you look at what's happening in employability and mental health and food banks, as we've talked about, and things like kind of children and young people's provision. There's some amazing things happening. One of the things we did with Your Neighbor was to commission a poll with Comrades, the polling agency, to find out how attitudes had changed from non-Christians to the church. And we did a study about 3 years ago that found that 20% of non-Christians either felt there was a place for the church was good for society, and that there was a kind of a role for the church to play. That's gone up to 34%, so it's gone up 14% during the last year. And I think there's something really exciting about that. To me, that suggests, I mean, we didn't ask this, but to me that suggests the impact that local churches are having in their local communities are making a difference on people's perceptions of what the church is and the role it can play in society. So that's a cool project we're working on. There's a couple of launches we've got coming up as well. We've got the Eternal Wall of Answered Prayer, which as well has garnered a huge amount of media interest. In October last year, we did a big one with the Sunday Times, but that then went kind of pretty huge. We I think ended up in something like 170 different media outlets.
Wow.
And went global. And I mean, what they're doing, I don't know if you've seen it, but I think you might actually be speaking to Rich shortly, but they're building this monument to Answer Prayer in the busiest part of Britain in terms of traffic, that's going to be bigger than the Angel of the North. And it's this beautiful structure, piece of art really, that's made up of about a million bricks that each have an Answer Prayer that you can put your phone up against and you can see, read the story of the Answer Prayer. So there's something great there. The other launch, there's a Mercy Ships are launching a big ship, a hospital ship in October, November, that's going out to Africa, and it gives these life-transforming surgeries to people who've got these huge tumours and things in their face, and they're kind of able to access medical support that they wouldn't have had otherwise. So there's things like that. But I mean, to be honest, it's such a wide range of organisations. We're working with a Christian dating app called Salt that are doing some really cool stuff and just bringing relationships together. And then this week we're working with Jesus House, the church in London, on a conference that they're doing, and that's what really gets me up in the morning, is that it's not just kind of Christian organizations just kind of doing one thing. It's they're having, there's the kind of the DNA of the faith is spread across commerce and aid and development and evangelism and even in the architecture and other places. So that's what really excites me, is that the church is definitely active just now, whether you define that by a church gathered community or the people. But yeah, there's loads of things. Amazing. That we're excited about.
If you're I'll just want to draw the listeners back to the beginning of the podcast. I said today was a good day. And if you're not encouraged by listening to that, I don't think anything would encourage you. Isn't that phenomenal? Just to hear the breadth, of what God is doing, and just the different ways in which the church is impacting society. And that Eternal Wall of Answer Prayer is phenomenal. I've seen some of the visuals of that online. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, I'm looking forward to spending some time with Richard on that. But Gareth, I want to just kind of drill down a little bit into your life now, and because you're obviously so passionate about what you do, and God's given you over time that clarity of mission, and you can see the passion coming out. But within all of that, as leaders and as the MD of the company and founder of the company, you're always growing in your personal life as well. You're always having to deal with the external battles and the internal, leadership development and battles and things we go through. So just what are some of those keys that you would say God has given you sort of in your personal life, along this journey? What are some of those leadership keys that you hang on to?
Yeah, I mean, that internal battle thing, I think, is important to speak about, because right. I think sometimes you can have that internal battle, and that I mean, from me, it's you know, one client might end their contract and I suddenly think, oh, the company's going out of business. Or, you know, someone sends, you know, a spelling mistake in a press release and suddenly I think our reputation's, you know, gone to pot. You need to manage those battles. It's normal as a business owner and as a leader to probably have a disproportionate response to things that are actually not that big a deal. But you need to build, I think, an internal ability to recognize your response and then recalibrate and see, you know, what your response should be and have some perspective. But I think the generation before us, there was one of the things that was quite important, I think, was bravado and sort of this strong leadership kind of, you know, stood in a platform, you know, great communicator, you know, not really showing weakness, and in fact in many cases hiding weakness. And I think that type of leadership has never felt natural to me, and I think that I tried to shoehorn myself into that type of leadership in my first 10 years of leading things. You know, I think I was trying to be that person, but I think I've realized that humility is actually a far stronger response in leadership, and that allows you to be empathetic as well. And they both sound like really soft things, right? They don't sound very kind of you know, robust, but actually there's nothing more robust than recognizing your weakness, being honest about your weakness, and then both in a business context, surrounding yourself with people who are better than you are, and but also engaging with where they're at and empathizing with where they're at, but also being direct. I've learned that empathy and directness don't have to be competing. You know, you can be empathetic, right, but speak into the heart of the issue at the same time if you've built the trust. And I think you build the trust by empathizing and by being humble. And if you're able to do that, then people know your motivation for speaking directly. So I think those two things are probably a couple of leadership lessons I've learned. I think also, and I the risk of sounding overly spiritual, but I think genuinely asking the Holy Spirit and seeking the Holy Spirit to guide you as a business leader, you know, where are you taking this business? Because if we start, there's a pressure sometimes for us to come up with, what's your 2-year plan? What's your 5-year plan? What's your 10-year plan? I've no idea. I've absolutely no idea, if I'm being honest. If any business leader to me was to say, this is where we're going to be in 2 years, I would have to challenge it, because no one knows what the market's going to do, what the economy is going to do, what, you know, what kind of trends are going to emerge from this crisis we've been through, how consumer behavior and charities, you know, donor behavior is going to change. These are all massive unknowns, but they're not unknown to the Holy Spirit. And so I think we that's where we need to kind of bed in and say, right, God, where are you leading us now? We know you're going to give it, a bit like Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, where they've got that big kind of chasm between them, and he throws the over and the first thing, you know, the path appears. I think what God's often telling us is to do is to just find that next step and just stand on that one, and then he'll show us the next step in the good time. So I think I've learned that the Holy Spirit is not restricted to my Sunday worship and not restricted to my personal devotion, but he's guiding us through when we're putting our budgets together and when we're employing staff and when we're writing a press release and when we're engaging with media and when we're building a some sort of strategy. You know, I think that he's interested in it all, and it's more us boxing him than it is him not being effective or engaged in that process. So I know that can come across as pious, but I think for us it's been a really important part of actually taking the burden off.
No, Gareth, I think that's so important to hear you say that, because I think, you know, one of the missions of this podcast is to be able to encourage and equip leaders in their role where they are right now, you know. And, you know, you've got a very, in one level, quite a high profile role within the media and the PR world, both in terms of clients you work with and the media you work with. And to hear you say that is, I think, super powerful. And I still think, you know, being honest and being maybe slightly controversial, I still think it's very easy to have a secular sacred divide. You know, I speak about this fairly often, where you say, well, my worship is on a Sunday and God's interested in that, but when I go to work, I've just got to try and make it happen, do it my way. And, you know, it's very easy for us to have that divide in our own minds, whether that's a theological thing or something we've been taught, or whether it's just we haven't experienced God yet in the workplace, in the marketplace, at the coalface, here and now, and I need your help now because I don't know what on earth I'm doing. And so, no, it's really brilliant to hear you say that. Thank you for that. And just taking that question kind of a step on, you know, one of the, you know, we learn good and bad things from leaders that that go around us. And you've obviously mentioned your father is quite a prominent leader, excuse me, you know, in his time and in his environment. But you work with leaders from all different walks of life. And so what leaders do you look up to, or have you looked up to, and who have you learned from?
Well, I think I'd have to say my dad was definitely the first leader, and what I learned from him was the I've got a terrible memory. So he died when I was 24, and my mum and dad actually died within 6 months of each other. So that was quite a traumatic experience to go through. So when I'm speaking in kind of past tense, it's because, you know, he's passed away. But I also have a terrible memory, so I can't remember stuff much from kind of my younger years, or but occasionally I see photos and I'm grateful for the, you know, not being able to remember some of the haircuts of the outfits. but one of the things I do remember is oftentimes running into my dad's study in our house, and you know, it'd be kind of 6:30 in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, and he had his Bible open, and that was his first thing he would do every single morning. And my mum, to be fair, did the same thing as well. She would do it as well. But it's a picture in my head that I can see him sat with his reading glasses at his study, at his desk. The first thing wasn't his emails. I think emails were a thing at that point. But, you know, it wasn't work. It wasn't anything else other than starting the day with the Bible. And I've not been good at that, to be honest. It's something I keep having to work at really hard because I find it difficult. I've recently discovered the narrated Bible, the audio Bible, and that's been a bit of a revolution for me. But I think his leadership in that was really strong. My dad was quite, when I speak to people who worked with him, he was quite a harsh guy at times. He can be quite a kind of direct man, and I definitely have softer skills than my mother, I think. But but I see what was important to him. And one of the things I've been able to keep is some of his handwritten sermon notes as well that wow. You know, are really kind of you know, precious, and again just show me, you know, his heart. But so I think he would definitely, and you know, he was a business owner, but he was all about the kingdom. He worked too hard at times. He had he died of a heart attack in the NBA. He actually had two heart attacks before that. Wow. So he definitely, you know, worked too hard. And I suppose I've learned that. You know, one of the things I do now is I don't work Friday afternoons. I just spend time with my daughter. Weekends, we don't do any work. I try to switch off at 5, if not 7 in the evening. And every, you know, weekdays, I try to be disciplined about family time. And what we say to our team is, a healthy family life for you is important to us, because that makes you a better you. And it helps you, your contribution, your overall contribution. And so that's maybe one of the kind of things that he didn't learn that I've learned from his life. But I'm very grateful to have had a dad who both gave time to me, but also really prioritized the word. I think just one other example of great leadership is a couple actually called John and Ellie Mumford, who used to be the national directors of the Vineyard movement in the UK. They're now, I think, they have an international role. But I learned from them was being authentic to yourself. And we haven't spent a huge amount of time together. We've occasionally had dinner together, but they're just so authentic in who they are. But also they handed over leadership of the national leadership of Vineyard in the UK to John and Debbie Wright in the most healthy way I think I've seen. Fantastic. I think that sort of legacy, you know, handing over of leadership, being humble in that, I think is one of the most difficult and devalued processes. Alex Ferguson didn't even do it very well. And so I think there's something really powerful when people do that well. And that's something I certainly want to learn from.
That's brilliant. Fantastic. Two great examples there. And we're coming to land now, Gareth, and a couple of one humdinger of a question now. What's the dream for Jersey Road PR and in your life? What are some of those things that bubble inside of you? And I love the fact, you know, before you answer, I love the fact that you said if you think we've got a business plan wrapped up for the next 2 years, 3 years, you're probably lying. 100% agree. But what are some of those things that are bubbling up inside of you? And you think, do you know what? You know, that's what I'm gunning for. That's what's really bubbling inside.
We want to reframe how the church is positioned through the media. You know, I'm tired of the stories. I think it's important that we recognize the stories of child abuse and financial misappropriation and what the church has done wrong, and we should repent of that. We should recognize it. We shouldn't hide it. But I'm tired of that being the only narrative. And for me, I want to reframe how the church is positioned. I want the church to be the good news of what the church is doing, to be out there in the national media, not just through kind of local or kind of sector media. But I want, because I think we have often within churches, we're often talking within an echo chamber. We're talking to our own bubble, and we need to reach the people who are outside, who would never come close to coming to a church. And I think the media is a great way of doing that. And so for me, if we can introduce people to Jesus by reframing how the church is positioned, how Christian organizations are positioned through the media, then that would be job done. And you know, we're doing it in the UK at the minute. We've been doing it in Australia for the last couple of years as well. I don't know what the next territory would be, but I'm open to kind of where God leads in that. But I think that we have to be bold about the fact that we have the truth. We have to be bold about that truth will set people free, and that the truth shouldn't be limited to a church setting. So I'm really keen that we get it becomes the norm. And it has done, to be fair. You know, when we started, we to get a national newspaper or a national outlet was a massive deal. And we cracked open the champagne. Now it's happening on a weekly basis. Wow. And I'm so excited about kind of what the potential of that might be.
That's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. What a testimony right there. And just the final question, Gareth, as we land, sort of looking back at your, you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing, right? Whenever I ask this question, I always think to myself, I'd give myself about 2,000 pieces of advice. But looking back at your life and your leadership journey, what's one piece of leadership advice you'd give your younger self?
It's dead cheesy to say be yourself, right? Because that's what kind of the Hollywood people say. So I mean, I agree with that. And I'd say it, but I think that's probably not quite what I want to land on right here. I think what I would probably say is your calling is bigger than your job. And I, whilst your job is a vehicle through which your calling can become a reality, I think, you know, my experience of being made redundant when I thought I was living my calling is who I am in Christ. And that the stuff that happens around that is important, but it's reliant on that being the foundation. I think the other piece of advice I would give for anyone starting a business would be get a good accountant.
Right. Agreed.
That was a game changer for us. When we got a good accountant, that changed our business.
Yeah. I've had an accountant since day dot, because otherwise it was left to me, it would be a disaster. But exactly. That's brilliant. I love that, Gareth. Gareth, thank you so much for just sharing your personal life and the road of Jersey Road PR. Now, you're not going to say it, so I'm going to say it. But obviously, if you are a Christian organization or church leader or any you know, Christian business, listen to this podcast and you're thinking, actually have got a story or you've got something you want to reframe within the Christian media, then go to jerseyroadpr.com. I think that's the web address,
right?
If I'm correct.
Yeah,
and yeah, check out their stories, check out their case studies, have a look at what they do. And if you want to connect, the contact details are on the website. I'm sure Gareth's on LinkedIn and those sort of platforms as well. But you know, they're doing an incredible job at exactly what you said the mission was, at reframing the Christian voice in the media. And you know, if you're someone that's got a voice and you believe it should be in the media, then check them out and you know, connect into Jersey Road PR. But Gareth, thank you so much for your time, for sharing your heart and your insight with us. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate the opportunity.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Wonderful Leaders Podcast. To be part of the community, join our close Facebook group and follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Simply look us up at Wonderful Leaders and we'll see you there.